Last Tuesday, Session held a special mini-retreat during which we discussed challenges and opportunities. We talked about who we are as well as who we want to be. We talked about radical hospitality, becoming a school of love, and my new favorite phrase, love beyond belief. We thought about what we as a congregation have to offer that's special, that's maybe a little rare. Chip summed it up when he said, and I'm just paraphrasing here, we are not a place where we tell you what you have to believe in order to be a part of us. Rather, we are a place in which we work on waking up to what God created us to be, and then fostering that awakeness in others. We are a community committed to the regular practice of waking up. And I say regular practice because, just like going to sleep and waking up every day, waking up spiritually is not a one-time only deal. So what do we have to do in order to wake up to what God created us to be? Well, for one thing, we first need to rest. We cannot wake up without first being asleep. This brings me back to last fall when Chip asked me if I would help out with starting a centering prayer group here at the church. Centering prayer is a contemplative Christian practice, and while I had at the time, been committed to a meditation practice already, centering prayer was brand new to me. So Chip pointed me to a book by Cynthia Bourgeau called The Heart of Centering Prayer, and it started me down a new path of spiritual rest and exercise. Exercise and rest. Those are two vital ingredients for good physical health. The muscles you work, they need recovery time. And so, with spiritual health, there also exists spiritual exercise and spiritual rest, which I would argue are just as vital. So remember back a few years when we as a congregation took the CAT scan survey, congregational assessment tool, and we earned the title Transformational Magi. Well, that was great. But the survey also reflected a reluctance for us as individuals to identify as truly spiritual. We may need a bit more exercise. That's advice we can handle. We are clearly open to transformation. We are transformational magi. If you read the Friday email, you might have seen that I referred to some studies done at the University of Virginia. As reported in a 2014 article in The Atlantic, the research showed again and again how terrible people are at sitting quietly with their own thoughts. In fact, in one study, the participants chose to give themselves electric shocks out of a desperate need of boredom or distraction, I don't know, despite having tested out the electric shock before the test and then claiming they would pay money not to experience it again. So how long were they asked to sit during the study, do you think? Hours? No, 15 minutes. 15 minutes. What do you do when you have nothing to do for 15 minutes? How long does it take you standing in line at the grocery store to pull out your phone? What is your form of electric shock? Okay, so at this point, you're probably thinking with some degree of skepticism, totally healthy. All right, Abby, you are about to prescribe to us sitting around for 15 minutes saying ohm, aren't you? Or maybe you've already tuned out and are looking for an electric shock as a distraction. Please stay away from the wiring. Well, stay with me, because I want to make sure that you aren't operating under some common misconceptions. Contemplative practices are not about a way to escape. It's not a hallucinatory state. It's not a new agey trend. Yes, fresh branding may come and go for contemplative practices in the Christian tradition and in other traditions, but they have been around almost as long as Christianity itself. A contemplative practice is also not intended as a way to relax or de-stress. though that is often a side benefit. Centering prayer itself is not about honing focus or concentration. What it is about is learning to let go. And Jesus shows us how. We heard it in our first lesson, that before Jesus was arrested, he talked with God. He expressed his fear and his reluctance to enter into a future of unknown suffering. And then he said, "Yet not my will, but yours be done." In the biblical translation called the Message, the translation goes like this: "But please, not what I want, what do you want?" This kind of presence of mind, to be able to step back from your own panic and ask what's better for the bigger picture, to relinquish control to God, that is not an easy thing to do. Jesus was able to do it because he had a divine spark, we could call it the Holy Spirit, that strengthened him to practice, and practice a lot. Think of how many times it says in the Bible that Jesus went off by himself and prayed. And guess what? We have that divine spark too. God is in all of us. We have everything we need. Jesus was able to see his own divinity, and his teachings radically encouraged us to see that in ourselves and others. So why do we resist this? And resist it we do. Well, I wonder if we are so often aware of our own flaws and failings that we feel too ashamed to imagine those failings sitting so close to divinity. Might seem somehow wrong or disrespectful. And maybe avoiding our own potential as a divine conduit protects us from some of the guilt of not behaving in a godlike manner all the time. But whatever our inner struggle, we can transform. We can listen to what's already inside of us, it just takes a little practice. We can exercise, and little by little, we can lay out all of our fears to God, and then we can let go, we can rest, and we can wake up to what God created us to be. So let's talk a little bit about some of the benefits, the practical benefits of sitting quietly, intentionally in the presence of God within and around you. For me, I found it's so much easier to be grateful all the time. Some people say they sleep better. My husband tells me I'm a little bit more patient. I don't think my kids do. But one of the most important benefits is resilience. Resilience is the difference between a knee-jerk reaction and a thoughtful response in a crisis. It's one of those elusive, socio-emotional skills that we all want for our children desperately, but we're really not sure if we're transmitting it properly. So what happens in the brain when you are building resilience? Well, resilience comes from when you first notice, in the face of some adversity, some crisis, when our brains automatically travel down some unhelpful habit path, and then being patient and understanding with our brains when they do that. And finally, encouraging the brains to take a new pathway. Maybe a little more time and space before you make that decision, before you react on autopilot. And adversity can take many forms. It can be a meal burning on the stove, a child that won't put on their shoes. It can be a friend spouting conspiracy theories on Facebook. Or it can be a challenging concept like, I contain divinity. It can be 15 minutes of having nothing to do. And when you practice taking time and space before responding to your autopilot thoughts and feelings, when you start increasing that time and space to be open and curious and non-judgmental about your own thoughts and feelings, that's how you're building your habit of resilience. There has been some really intriguing research done on brain scans, which shows that having a closed off, rigid, clenching reaction to a confusing or unfamiliar stimulus, some adversity, that lights up a pathway in your brain that goes to the primitive, the fight or flight areas of your brain called the amygdalae. And that's plural because we actually have more than one amygdala. If instead you respond to this confusing stimulus or this unknown, unfamiliar stimulus with an open, curious, non-judgmental mindset, then the pathways go a different way. They go to your more advanced, evolved forebrain instead. So that's the muscle workout you're doing when you practice resting and awareness, acknowledging your stumbling blocks, being okay with them, and letting go, as we do in centering prayer. I bet you didn't realize that a contemplative practice is basically taking your brain to the gym for some non-resistance training. So let's go to James in our second lesson. James explodes some truth bombs in this passage, and he is not holding back. He is scolding. And I did not pick this reading because I needed to scold you all. I picked it because of the many contrasts he uses to illustrate his point, and also his solutions intrigued me. Wash your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. Love that. Let your laughter become mourning, your joy become sorrow. Submit to God. So let's pick this apart a little bit. Washing your hands, that calls us to physical action. Let's make good happen with our hands in the world, friends. Now, purifying our hearts, that's about our thoughts. And that's where James is asking us to do some of this spiritual exercise. Guide your thoughts to God. You'll find God there. Then he says double-minded, which I love because James is talking about divided loyalties. But for us today, it could very easily evoke our tendency to multitask. And that inevitably goes wrong. James also uses this phrase earlier in his letter, where he says, a double-minded man is unstable in his ways. And multitasking is definitely an unstable practice. So how do we stabilize a mind torn in two by loyalties, other distractions from within and without? How do we reconcile our thoughts from two minds, especially when they seem totally opposed to one another? Well, we can start by practicing holding two disparate ideas in our mind at the same time. We can try sitting with the possibility of two separate things coinciding, coexisting as one. Jesus is God and man. I am prone to error, and yet God exists throughout my DNA. God is in all of us, not as a separate, removable accessory, but as the core spiritual operating system. James's letter seems to confirm that his contemporaries saw things with that same binary perspective in which we still tend to see things, good and bad. Laughter, sorrow, tears, joy, my tribe versus your tribe, black and white, God external to us. I can hear Joni Mitchell singing, laughing and crying, you know it's the same release. James reminds us with his list of opposites that when you're in doubt about what the world is telling you to do, when you're confused by these opposites, by your own autopilot habits, just let go, release, submit to God. Not our will, but yours. So by resting in awareness of God with us, by being open and curious about the paths God will lay at our feet, if we only pay attention, we can keep our spiritual operating systems up to date. I caution you to just be patient with how long that cursor spins on the screen. Because it does take a long time to download. It takes time And that those latest updates, not to beat a metaphor to death here, but the latest updates do need daily attention. But it's a joyful process. Then we can boot up with eyes open. Let's taste the joy of being awake. Amen.